I possess some say I'm fresh. When my voice goes through the mess of the microphone that I am holding, copywritten lyrics on the campus knows if they are that. Don't need the police to try to save them. Your voice will sing, so please stay off my back or I will attack, and you don't want that.
Good evening. This is the Wake Up Call. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is here every Wednesday trying to wake you, wake ourselves up to the issues of the day in our community, in our state, and in our nation sometimes. We're here from 5 to 6 o'clock. We're delighted if you're listening to us today. And we are so pleased to have somebody who's never been on our show before, and I think he's new to this community anyhow, or to this job, and we're going to find out more about him and where he's from and what his work is. He's with one of our favorite, very favorite organizations, NC Warn, and his name is Onte Johnson, and we are just delighted to have you here, Onte.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good. In spite of the traffic, you're particularly glad that you made it here, huh?
Exactly.
I always try to warn our guests that the 5 o'clock traffic can be gridlocked in Carborough and probably other places, too. So he made it in the nick of time. So, Onte, this is a new position, your job with as an you're a community organizer?
Yes, I'm a community organizer with NC Warren. I've new to the organization, new to the state, but I've been an organizer for a very long time now.
You look very young to have been that long a time, but tell us a little bit about your organizing experience.
Sure. Well, I first started out organizing for the Boy Scouts of America.
Okay.
In Connecticut. I'm from Connecticut, Bridgeport, Connecticut, that is, and I was the first community organizer, believe it or not, in the history of scouting. as you know, there's never been a position called community organizer. It's usually a den chief or a scoutmaster or a troop leader, never a community organizer. So it was sort of a pilot plan to try to see if we can get more kids involved in scouting in urban communities. And when I really started getting my organizing legs growing.
Okay. And this was back in Connecticut?
This was back in Connecticut, yes.
So for how long did you do that with the Boy Scouts?
I was working for the Boy Scouts for about 2 years. Had a great experience. We grew the program in about 10 schools, 450 kids. We had 21 parents. And also like 27 teachers recruited. So it was a great program. And then once I left the Boy Scouts, I started working for the Sierra Club as a community organizer, Beyond Coal organizer there in Bridgeport.
So this was about coal?
This was about coal, yes. This was a Beyond Coal organizer working with the Sierra Club. And, you know, one of the reasons why I started getting involved in that is being an organizer, as you may know, it's all about building relationships, you know. So when you are out there in the community and you're meeting with folks, you're building solidarity and working with other organizations, you realize that there's other issues that other groups and community members are facing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the issues that we were facing was a lot of our children in the scouting had asthma. So they were missing days from school. They were missing days from the PAC meetings and the troop meetings that we had. And I started to question, you know, what is really going on here? And that's when I started realizing that there's a coal plant in our backyard that's causing a lot of these effects, the reason why our children have a lot of asthma. So I started getting involved, and I started volunteering first, and then a job opening came up with the Sierra Club, and I said, you know, I want to start helping out because scouting is all about outdoors, you know. So how can we promote scouting if our kids are being exposed to bad air, you know, and they have to breathe in these dirty toxins? So I started getting involved on the Beyond Coal campaign, and I was working there for about 3 years, and I had a great experience doing that. And I was very passionate about the environment and the air that we breathe and the water that we drink.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, you know, when I think about coal, I don't think of Connecticut. I don't know why, but they don't have coal mines there, but they had a coal plant.
That's correct. We have a coal plant, one remaining coal plant, which is located in Bridgeport, which is a black and brown community. It's a community that's very dominated by minorities. So, you know, that's another EJ issue, EJ being environmental justice. So, you know, it's like, why are they targeting these communities? And then when you start to realize and look all across the nation, power plants and coal plants are targeting communities of color that's really impacting their quality of life and their quality of living.
And I wonder how many people who are not being directly affected, how many recognize or realize this deliberate targeting of poor communities for power plants, for coal plants, for landfills. We've had a big issue here. How long have you been in this community?
I just moved to North Carolina in April.
So you're new here.
So I'm new here.
Yeah.
I'm loving it here. I love North Carolina. I'm going to make North Carolina my home.
Okay.
So this is where I'm going to lay my head and rest.
Well, I moved down here in 65, one of that first wave of IBMers. My ex-husband. With the Research Triangle Park opening up, and I never thought I'd be here forever, but I guess I am. So it's been a long time. I'm an adopted daughter now. But I don't know if you've heard yet about the Rogers Road community here, which is north of town, and that's where the landfill has just closed that was there for 40-some-odd years, and that's been a huge, huge issue in this town. Because when they first placed it in that neighborhood, an African-American neighborhood, they said it would be for 10 years. And then we're going to cover it over and plant grass, and it will be a lovely park. And it got where they said, oh, we can't. It's going to be too hard, you know. And they kept expanding it. So the community organized itself, and only by organizing and for years had that battle. And finally, and then other people, and so they weren't fighting it by themselves. It took organizing the white community and churches and getting support that finally... but it's a tough thing once it gets entrenched in a neighborhood, whatever it is. They say, oh, it's too hard, it's too expensive. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's just sad where you have empty promises and broken promises that are not being kept. You know, you said it was supposed to be something that was there for 10 years, and here we are, you know, 40 years later that is now being addressed. And it's just sad, you know, because it really drains the morale for the community, but it speaks to the resiliency of those folks that was there organizing themselves. And just the power of organizing alone is very powerful. You know, we the people, when we raise our voices united and collectively, you know, we can really shift the balance of power, and we can really demand, you know, the promise makers to keep their promise and be promise keepers.
Yeah.
And that's why I love organizing, and that's why I'm so thrilled and excited to be a part of NC Warren and community organizing here. I mean, we have a lot of work to do here in North Carolina, with our organization and all the challenges that we have with combating against climate change and the big corporate giant Duke Energy that's out there. You know, we're trying to really get them to change their business model, you know, and realize that just dumping on communities is not the solution. I'm quite sure you guys all heard about the recent agreement that happened in Chatham and Lee County. And that's something that we're really concerned about. You know, it's not cleaning up if you're just moving it to another locale and dumping it there. You know, what about those folks there? You know, those folks are saying a different story. You know, while Duke may go out on a record and make it seem like they're doing something successful or something courageous, those community members are speaking a different tone.
Oh.
They're saying, no, why is this coming in our community? What are we going to do with this? How long is this going to be here in our community? I mean, we don't want to repeat what we just talked about. You know, how long is it going to be here? Is it going to be another 40 years and that community have to be affected by these dumps? And so it's something that we really have to do it, and the urgency is now.
Yeah, we've been with the Women's International League and other allies, we've been very involved with that. And the way they are doing it with this plastic liner, you know, no matter what they say about how good that plastic is, you know, and what they only want to take responsibility for, I forget how many years now, but it's not forever. They're going to be washing their hands of it. And I feel so sorry for the people in Lee and Chatham. And Dick and I are really familiar with the Moncure community because there's a plywood plant there that went on strike. Dick, do you remember how many years ago? Many.
Too many.
Too many.
To remember.
About 5-6 years ago, yeah. I think, something like, yeah. Maybe 5 or 6 years ago they went on strike and they were being treated terribly, and so we got real involved when we heard about it, and we went out every week for a year to support them, bring sandwiches, stand on the picket line with them, and they finally won. The union won an agreement of sorts. It was not that good an agreement,
right.
But yeah, but ever since then, we were in Chatham County so much, we got to know the mayor and people in the council there better than our own. We, you know, because we were doing organizing there too, getting the community involved. We had at Christmas time, we had a huge rally outside the courthouse there, and people brought money and help for Christmas for the ones who are on strike.
That's right.
So that's a community that has a special place in our hearts, and it is heartbreaking how certain communities, and you're right, it's a poor community, and they get targeted. You know, old clay mine there? Anyhow, so you're working and trying to get some handle on Duke Power. We're all trying to see if we can't have some compensatory power so they don't run things the way they are right now.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. I mean, Duke have the power. You know, they have the resources. They have the ability and the control to do the right thing.
Yeah.
The question is, why aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they can figure out and invest hundreds of millions of dollars if they choose to invest in research and new technology,
mm-hmm.
and how we can figure out a solution to do something with this coal ash.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they doing that? You know, Duke have the resources and the power to invest in renewable energy in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Why instead are they blocking options,
mm-hmm.
blocking us from having choice, blocking folks from, you know, being able to have the opportunity to choose solar?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the things that is not helpful,
mm-hmm.
and they can choose to do better.
Yeah, well, one thing I understand from NC Warren is here they're a monopoly, I think it's either out west or somewhere that they have competition. And when they have that kind of competition with some other power companies, they do better in terms of renewable energy and stuff. But unfortunately, here they're a monopoly, and we're all stuck. If we want to turn the lights on, most of us are pretty dependent on them. Now, I know that you all are working hard on solarizing and helping people solarize so that there's a little bit of competition there. Are you working on that? What aspect? I know NC Warren is struggling on many different fronts with trying to address all these issues. It started out about nuclear. The nuclear power plant, and that's one of the big issues that we used to get together about. So what particular thing are you assigned to focus on, or is it all the above? What?
That's a great question. Well, we're working on everything. I'm focused on, and I'm focused in the Triangle area here, and trying to get folks to become more supportive to the communities that are affected by coal ash, and trying to slow down that process. Mm-hmm. And just the unique experiences that I bring to the table from my background working in environmental organizing previously, my background in environmental public policy. I have a master's degree in public policy. So my job is to work with these communities, inform them, and let them know that they do have a voice, and mm-hmm. that they do have us there that have their back. We are in the midst of forming a statewide coal ash, a community effort, where all these different communities are feeling like they don't have a voice because it's just the decision makers and Duke just making these backdoor agreements. They're not really being transparent about it. The community is finding out last minute. Our job is to build this coalition that's statewide so our message could be unified. Our message could be all collective. The strength comes in the numbers. Mm-hmm. So we're working on this statewide effort. I'm also going to be working close with these communities to develop a coal ash forum where we can bring all the decision makers to the table, and we can really start having those questions being answered, those demands being heard from the community members, because there's a lot of questions that folks have, and also just what we do as an organization, and trying to advocate for our energy future, a clean energy future, mm-hmm. So advocating tabling displays for Solarize. Since I've been on board as the rookie, I've been assigned to do a lot of tabling events where I had to set up tables, and we've knocked on doors, Sally and I, and hung up door hangers to let folks know about their options so that they can sign up for a free solar assessment. So, we're still advocating for clean energy. That's something that we're always going to be doing. But working directly with the communities that are affected, that are impacted, and getting them together to form this statewide effort.
So when you're talking about those communities, are you talking about Moncure and communities in Lee County? Is that what you're focused on?
Absolutely.
So that you do a lot of traveling then to do your organizing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just me, we work as a group and as a team. And that's one of the reasons why I love NC Warren and our family. We have great organizers that's spread out all throughout the state. I just want to give them a shout out, Ken Porter and Raven. We have Nick Wood, Connie, and myself. We are the organizing team, so we all work together as a group, and we're all spread out throughout the area. So Raven and Kim is in a triad area.
I don't think we've ever had Raven. So what's Ken's last name?
Ken Porter.
I don't think we've ever had Ken Porter or Raven on. We've had Pete McDowell just recently retired, and we had Sally on relatively recently, and we've had Is Sammy Slade still with you?
No, we have Nick Wood.
And Nick Wood we've had on, but not for quite a long time. He's an old buddy from way back with the farm workers.
Yeah.
So there's a few of you. We'll have to keep that in mind. So Ken Porter and what's Raven's last name?
Julian St. Brown.
Okay. Well, we'll have to keep that in mind because we like to get somebody from NC Warren on about every 3 or 4 or 5 months, you know, because there are always new things coming up with the organization.
Absolutely. And they're doing a terrific job, and I'm quite sure that they'll love to come on
and
you know, give you guys an update on what's happening in their areas.
But,
you know, we all work together. We all check in frequently, weekly. All the time, so that we're keeping each other abreast of what's happening in each prospective areas. You know, Raven and Kim in the Triad, Nick is down east, myself in the Triangle area. And, you know, we realize that there is a lot of challenges, but there is so much synergy that's going around now from the community members that's now starting to organize themselves and be a part of this larger movement.
Yeah.
And I think that that's going to be awesome. And I can't wait to this kicks off.
Okay. Are we having technical difficulties, folks? Or I hope it's being worked out. And I think at the beginning of the show, I forgot to say who we, besides our being with Wilf, but I'm Lori Hoyt, and Dick Paddock is our board person, and Emily O'Hare does the video camera. But so she also can spell Dick if he wants to take a break or go on a little bit of a vacation. We're so delighted because for a long time we didn't have anybody. We needed to take a break. So we're here and we're talking with Onte Johnson. I had somebody give me some feedback recently, and they said, you know, your show's really interesting, but you never, if somebody tunes in a little bit late, you don't mention your guest's name enough, so I don't know who you're talking to. And so I want to start, I realize that Amy Goodman every 15 minutes talks about who her guest is, you know, and I try to learn from the best. Everyone's all watch Amy, and I think, oh, now how's Amy doing that? Our guest is Onte Johnson. He's with NC Warren, and we're talking about their struggle with Duke Power that's been ongoing, and they're still trying to get Duke Power under some sort of regulation and some sort of control so they don't run roughshod over all of us like they're now trying to do with a whole new thing about coal ash. That's been a whole new issue in just the last few years after that terrible spill that we had on the Dan River. And now they're, instead of doing what I think environmentalists recommended, what did they take that coal ash on site and bury it there and make sure it's buried properly. Instead, they're wanting to ship it hundreds of miles away to put the responsibility on low-income communities that will have a very hard time. They're making promises, and we started off this program today on Tay talking about promises made and promises not kept. And this is what the big fear is, that they say they have these liners. How long do they say they're good for, 20 years, 30 years?
Yeah, roughly around there.
Something like that. And, of course, but this is going to be permanent. What happens if 20 or 30 years in the life of a community is just a short blip of time? So what happens? And I never would trust any plastic that much.
I mean, I wouldn't either. My colleague Nick and I went to a meeting in Lee County in Sanford, and it was a representative there from the community that said that the plastic liners are as thick as 2 plastic credit cards put together. So is that what you want to protect you from coal ash when we've seen what happened with the Dan River? No,
yeah,
absolutely not.
Absolutely.
You know,
not.
So it's very sad what's going on. And, you know, what is the definition of insanity? Is repeating the same mistakes over and over, expecting a different result. You know, are we going to be here 20 years from now having the same conversation with another organizer? Mm-hmm. You know, how long are we going to still have the same message and the same fights? It's happening. It's real. It is showing that it is leaking. It is affecting the communities. So why aren't they doing something and investing in ways that they can actually clean it up, recycle it, and have a better use for it?
Yeah.
You know, that's where they should be putting their hard-earned spent money in, not just saying, hey, here's some money in exchange. We're just going to leave this dump and don't have a plan for phase out.
Yeah. So they're contracting out the person to move it for them. I forget the name of that company, but starts with a C. And then the responsibility will be in the community. They're the ones that will be holding the bag. And I think not everyone in that community realizes that. And, of course, the way they do this with the money that they have, instead of putting it to do the right thing, they do to put it to essentially try to bribe the communities. Here, if you let us do that, we'll build you a ball field, or we'll give you X amount of dollars. And the communities are poor and struggling, and unfortunately they feel, oh, maybe it'll be worth it. The promises are made. And I just worry myself. I could get sick about it, thinking 20 years from now, 30 years from now, are we going to be having some kind of leak and the water ruined in Moncure and in Lee County.
Yeah. It's time to take a break, station break, halfway through the show, roughly. And
catch your breath. This is what we always have. We make some announcements now.
Yes. We need to remind people that we are interviewing Ante of
Johnson.
Ante Johnson of NC Warren, one of our favorite environmental groups, North Carolina Waste Awareness Reduction Network. We do more than that. They do more than that now. But that was the way it started. It was dealing with the Sharon Harris nuclear power station. Excuse me. I'm Dick Paddock with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and we're listening. You're listening to us over 103.5 FM, which is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. I'm here with Lori Hoyt, who's doing the interview, and also with Emily O'Hare, who's running the camera and had a flame out. Fortunately, we seem to have got it restarted.
Is that what happened?
For some reason, the battery appeared to run down, but I had it sitting at home for hours, plugged in, so I didn't.
Uh-oh.
Well, whatever.
Technology is always a struggle.
Right. So, excuse me. So that's what we're working with right now, and we need to let you know that these facilities here are part of an all-volunteer, teeny tiny, small transmission, 100-watt radio station. And of course, we are also, that is, the people of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom are also an all-volunteer group. And excuse me. And
I'll do when
we apparently have some announcements. Which
yeah,
is
I'll make
thing.
An announcement so you can get your throat ready there. And if you need a peppermint, I'll go. I got one in my bag somewhere. Okay, this is the biggie that we started announcing a couple weeks ago, and we still have this week and next week to announce.
Right.
But save the date, July 13th, Winston-Salem. And what are we going to go there for? This is going to be our Selma. There's going to be a federal court will begin the trial of the historic lawsuit, NCAACP versus McCrory. It's the voting rights case against Governor McCrory and North Carolina's voter suppression law. This law is the first and the worst since the Shelby versus Holder decision, which gutted the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And the outcome will impact voting rights across the nation. So this will not only affect North Carolina, this will be a landmark case that if it goes in the right direction, could help all these many voting rights suppression legislation that has like a cancer across our country with some of these Republican legislatures. And this law here represents the extremist agenda of Governor McCrory, former Speaker of the House Tillis, and Senate Leader Berger. So it's going to start at 8 in the morning with a pre-trial press conference. From 10 to 4, there will be teach-ins and talk about organizers. A lot of organizers on tape will be there having teach-ins about various issues that Moral Monday's been concerned with, whether it's trying to get the minimum wage up to $15, whether it's environmental issues like what you're working on, education. And Medicare, the state has turned away billions of dollars in free Medicaid money that's under the Obama health care program, Obamacare, as some call it. And the state is so hurt by this. 500,000 people are affected by this. And this is what they're turning away. That right now we do have Medicaid in this state, but it's for the poorest of the poor. There's people who are working, the working poor, who don't make quite enough to even get on the Obamacare, any of the, even with subsidies, any of the insurance programs, with their premiums even being subsidized. They don't make enough even to get on the bottom rung. But that's what the program was developed, that there would be Medicaid expansion for that group of people. And the federal government is paying 100%, I think, for the first year or the first couple of years.
First 3 years,
and then 90%. And this state, due to ideology, and that's all it is, and stupidity, is not participating. So this is, and there are people who are dying because of not having health care.
So what we have, we should call it McCrory Care.
Yeah, we should call it what we have, McCrory Care. Oh, that's good, Dick. Good for you. I like that. So on the 13th is the first the opening of that trial in federal court. And so there'll be teach-ins and activities all day, but it will culminate in a march for voting rights through downtown Winston-Salem, just as they marched through Selma 50 years ago. We will not surrender the most fundamental right of democracy, the unabridged right to vote. North Carolina is our Selma. So from 5 o'clock on, there will be a march and a rally for voting rights. If you want to get more information, and I hope you do, or if you want to help volunteer, you can email forwardtogether, all one word, forwardtogether at NAACPNC, for North Carolina, .org. Email forwardtogether at NAACPNC.org. And you can also go on the website, www.forwardtogether.org. It's very similar, NAACPNC.org at NAACP. So that's a good way to get information, because the sites where the rally will be announced. Now, some people are going to go, if they live close, and some people are going to stay overnight. On July 12th, there'll be a Forward Together prayer and worship service at 6 p.m. There will be buses from United Church of Christ, or it's also called the United Church of Chapel Hill. It's on Martin Luther King Boulevard. And
Email NAACP.
And you just email NAACP to find out about the bus. Is that still, I think those plans, what time they'll be and that nitty-gritty specifics is still to be announced. So we're trying to have people save the date, prepare themselves, see if you want to go early or if you can go early. If you can't, if you're working, but at least try to get out of work a little early to get there at 5 o'clock. And there'll also be carpooling. It's going to be historic. You'll be so sorry if you don't go, and you'll be so glad if you do go to take part in this, and you can tell your children and your grandchildren. Some of us didn't get to Selma, but this is our chance to be part of this historic moment. And Reverend Barber, who's our hero, is one of the ones organizing this, and he'll be there. And so we're all very excited about it. We'll talk about it next week, too.
Right.
And hope you're putting it on your calendar, and I hope you're getting excited about going. So is there any other? Oh.
Well, there is one small item attached to this, and that is that the legislature has passed a bill that sort of makes it a little bit easier. I don't remember the details, but it's something to the effect of if you can prove that you should be able to vote and should register, but haven't been able to for some, I don't know, sort of handicap reason. No?
Emily, speak up here. Come and get up.
She's saying that to use a polite word, it's not really good.
Yeah, I think if I remember, they're changing a little bit about the picture ID, easing. I think they're very nervous about this court thing, and I think they're trying to look a little bit better. It's too little, and it's too late. So that's all we'll say about that, since we can't be more specific. Okay,
one other little item here in our break, and that is to recognize our underwriter, Internationalist Bookstore.
Yeah, we almost forgot.
101 Lloyd Street here in Carrboro. Right within my view.
Yeah, we can see it from diagonally right across the parking lot. We're at the Art Center over to Lloyd Street, and we can see the side of the building.
Right.
And
so
we could walk over there.
Go over to Internationalist Bookstore, look around at the alternative things you won't find anywhere else, including some of the best bumper stickers around.
Yes, and also I do have another announcement. It's creeping up on us. The 4th of July is this Saturday. And the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom traditionally has a table at Carrboro's 4th of July. Carrboro is down home 4th of July. It is live music out in front of the town hall. Usually they come out about 2 in the afternoon with some free watermelon. They have things for the kids. They have live music all day. And so we'll be there under the trees. Please look for us. We'll have information about us, about other things that are going on. We'll have information about July 13th. So we'd love to have you come and say hello. We just love going to the 4th of July at just only in Carrboro because it is a down-home, small-town festival. The kids march from Weaver Street Market down the block to the town hall. But on a serious note, there is something very serious going on, and that's going to be what, Emily?
Century Center.
At the Century Center from 12 to 1:30, there's going to be readings of Frederick Douglass's writings.
And specifically the speech that he gave about the 4th of July and what it means
to black people. I know. I always have a little bit of mixed feelings about the 4th of July, and it wasn't for Carrboro, but and that we get to participate, and the library gets to participate too, the Friends of the Library. So yes, so at the Century Center, which is just, you can do both, folks. You can come and visit us at the booth at the
under the tree,
and you can also get on over just down the block to the Century Center from 12 to 1:30. So you can come see us beforehand and then come back afterwards. But that'll be very moving. And I'm going to do both. Hope that you will, too. Yeah. Anything else that we have coming up?
That's enough.
That's enough. Okay.
Back to our guest.
Okay, we're going to get back to our guest, who is Ante Johnson, who is here from Connecticut. Connecticut's loss is North Carolina's gain. He is an experienced community organizer and has been doing it for several years, even though he looks like he's just out of high school, but he's got a little more maturity than that, and been working on environment for a long time. And now he came here in April and is working with one of our favorite organizations. I always want to give them a plug, NC Warn, and working specifically in Lee and Chatham County on the coal ash dumping situation. Along, I'm sure, doing other things too, but that's something he's specifically working on, but mostly. Is that a fair way to put it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is the actual situation now? You told us about the liner being the thickness of two credit cards.
Yeah, what's happening, actually? When is it starting? Has it started? You know, I pay attention, and then I get into other things and lose track. So have they started yet?
No, not yet. It's still being decided. There's still lots of it's just an agreement that they have now. But there's still lots of permits and other legal proceedings that still has to follow before it actually the truck starts to roll in.
So it ain't over till it's over?
It ain't over till it's over. So, you know, there's still some legal permits that's out there. So, you know, we're trying to do everything that we can possibly do to slow down the process.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, to work with the communities that are feeling impacted and are impacted by this, to work with them to make sure that they're a part of the bigger picture in this statewide effort that we're putting together.
Because I know a lot of them have been out protesting about it, but you need more. I don't know if you're going to try to have some huge protest, or all of that's evolving right now, just getting the community organized.
Yeah, you know, right now what's mainly important is making sure that the communities are organized and that they're organizing themselves. And that
they know the whole story.
And that they know the whole story and not half the story, because, you know, it's
not just Duke Power's version of the story.
You know, of course they're going to make it seem like they've done something heroic, and they're going to tout it, and they're going to make it seem like it's something to celebrate and to praise. But, you know, it's really not. You know, it's actually something that's really saddening to know what's going to happen. But, you know, our thing is working with the communities. It's not, you know, something that we want is what the community wants.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be community-led. You
mm-hmm.
know, the communities have to collectively raise their voices and
mm-hmm.
create their own demands, because it is them who elects and votes in their elected officials and their decision makers
mm-hmm.
that are the ones that are making these deals. That's supposed to be, you know, representing the best interests of their constituents.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what our job is as organizers, to reach out to them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we keep up with what's going on? Do you have a centralized storage repository, like your website, that says these are the things that are planned in the communities?
Well, our website is constantly being updated on the progress and updates of what's going on. We're constantly sending out editorials and newsletters to keep folks engaged on our work and how they can get plugged into our work. So thanks for actually mentioning that. Two things, if I can mention.
Any and all.
Our website for folks can go on to. It is www.ncwarn.org. We will have a table display at the Eno River Festival this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an update there.
That's a really big festival.
It's a huge festival.
Very popular.
4th of July as well as the 5th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be there. So we encourage folks to come by, stop by our table to get more information. Go on our website. And we can take any donation, essentially, for folks to become a member of our organization so that they can subscribe to our newsletters, to be on our emailing list so that they can know what's going on, but also how they can be involved and engaged in this fight that we're in. So those are the things that I wanted to get out there. So, you know, there's no one solution that we obviously have. You know, we're organizers, and our job is to, you know, NC Warren as watchdogs, our job is to deliver the information and the knowledge to the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really it's up to Duke to figure out their solutions. I mean, they're the ones that have the money to do so, right? So our demand to Duke is come up with the solution. And and what we do know, our stance is the solution is not taking it from one community and targeting another community just to put it there. That is not a solution, and that is not it's just a quick fix, and, you know, that's just going to leave a problem 20 years down the line from now. So we need to start discussing ways that we can talk about what is this coal ash problem? What is the coal ash solution? Because obviously just moving it and relocating it is not cleaning it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of a time when I was a child, when my mother used to tell me to clean up my toys off the floor because we had company coming over, and I would just sweep it under my bed. Did I really clean up my room, or did I just move the mess to another location so it could be hidden
uh-huh.
for when a company comes in?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what's really going on here, but just at a larger scale. But this time, instead of sweeping your pile under your bedroom, this can actually have health effects if it leaks.
Yes.
And folks start having this contaminated water, and they're drinking in the stuff. I mean, that's just it's just inhumane. You know, we all deserve the right to breathe in clean air and to drink clean water.
Yeah.
And Duke have the opportunity to rise as heroes and be champions to start something new, to do this, to figure out a solution for it. And we're willing to work with them so that they can come up with the solutions, but we're not willing to stand by and just let them dump on communities. And folks are coming to us, knocking on our doors and saying, why is my wells contaminated?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Duke is only giving me a gallon of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
What can we really do with a gallon of water a day
mm-hmm.
that you have to use to cook, to bathe with,
mm-hmm.
to drink?
Mm-hmm.
What is a gallon of water going to do for anybody?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you something then. I had thought that, and I don't know, it wasn't necessarily NC Warren, but I had thought that there was solutions proposed somewhere, definitely about having it on site, not moving it anywhere else and doing something. I think they have 14 sites, right?
That's correct.
And that to keep them there, but how they keep them there and what kind of a way to bury them or do that, that's what you're saying. Duke has got to figure out what would be the safest way. I thought maybe there were already some ideas, but not really. It's
no ideas that's actually being put into motion. That's actually making a difference.
Yeah.
You know, just leaving it there is not really a solution either. I mean, what we need Duke to do is to actually clean it up, you know, and figure out a better use for it. I mean, it's happening in other places. It's just not happening here, and they have the means to do so.
So, So in other places, they can make, like, stuff to pave the roads with it?
It could be recycled, used in highway berms. It could be recycled, putting to bricks and concrete. There's all different types of, methodologies of what could be a better use of just essentially just leaving it there and just letting time just wear and tear it down. But those are
expense.
It costs for huge amounts of research, but they have the means to do that.
They do. You know,
would you rather invest $102 million in a fine for dump for spill, or could you use $102 million to invest in a new way of figuring out how can we not have this mess happen in the future?
And then you invent a technology with that $102 million, and then you sell it.
How many jobs that can create.
Yeah.
Think of what we can do with $102 million. I mean, it's insane that they have to use that money to pay out, to clean, to pay fines, instead of having that money being paid to do something for a better use.
And look how expensive it's going to be to ship it around. They have to build a special railroad track, and they were going to do it in railroad cars. I've heard different that being first it was trucks, then it was going to be railroad cars, and it's going to be covered so it didn't blow out as they're driving. And that seemed a pretty flimsy way they
were
going
to talking about reducing our carbon footprint, right?
Oh my God! So the whole thing, just when you think of all the money between fines and that, this one thing that is so distressing about corporations, at least in this country, is that they just think of the short-term gain, and they do not know how to think long-term. And that's like in all kinds of corporations, but Duke Power is like a prime example in this particular thing. You know how short-sighted it is. They want to be here for a long time, and it's just mind-boggling that they are so short-sighted.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, I think you mentioned it, at the top of the top of the segment here is when they are in places where there is competition.
Mm-hmm.
They do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
They have reduced their rates by 17% in places where there's competition. Here in North Carolina, since there's no competition, we have to experience them with rate hikes.
Yeah.
Big rate hikes. And, so how is that helping our communities? How is that helping folks when they're jacking up rates in places where they're the big monopoly, but then in places where there's competition, they're driving down rates just so that they can stay compatible, It's kind of a funny dichotomy that they're in this position.
Mm-hmm.
But, nevertheless, there is options out there. And that is one thing that our organization is fighting for. And we encourage, everybody that's out there that's listening to contact their legislator, because there is ways with the solarized and the no money down solar through the Energy Freedom Act. Folks can start getting involved in that. And that's still something that's pending in the legislature. So we urge everyone to contact their legislator, to let their legislator know that they want them to support solar, because that can come in and not just something that's going to break up the monopoly, but it gives us options, right? It gives us choice.
It gives a little bit of competition.
And it gives competition. And if it gives that competition, maybe Duke could start decreasing those rates, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are the things that, it's important. And it's just obviously important that if we can harness energy, I mean, we're in 2015, right? We have technology that's being invented every month, it seems like, every day.
Well, and just like the solar rates of the equipment is reduced about 80% now from what it was a few years back.
Yeah,
I mean the technology is improving to where it is affordable. Bless you.
Bless you.
to where it is affordable.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's what this bill is about, you know, the Energy Freedom Act, where it's no money down.
Oh, that's what it's called, the Energy Freedom.
Yeah, the Energy Freedom Act, where it's no money down solar, so you don't have to put up the upfront cost. There's companies that are out there that are willing, you know, to front that, so that it could be affordable and accessible through all. So, you know, obviously there's still a lot of challenges that's in there, but it's a good sign and it's a good step forward. And it's also something that is promoting renewable energy, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can figure out a way to harness energy and electricity through natural resources and mm-hmm. not have to deal with leftover dumps or piles or ash, then that's where we should be going. And other countries are doing that. You know, why aren't we doing that? And North Carolina can be a game changer in that front.
Well, and it's not only the residue, the coal ash, it's that to get coal, they use more and more invasive methods, you know, mountaintop removal, which just the thought of it is horrifying.
It is.
And it's horrifying what it does to mountain communities, you know, where the erosion and it just ruins. They talk about ruining water. I mean, the whole process. And what's really scary, I just heard on the radio that a lot of our coal getting shipped to developing countries, that coal in the last 3 or 4 years is more and more coal being produced and not just with us sent to developing countries. And, you know, we've got to take leadership in this country. There's going to be that huge climate change conference coming up. When is it? The end of the year, I think, mm-hmm. in Paris. And the Pope has just come out with a wonderful encyclical.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And he's coming in September to New York and the UN and to D.C. And has been invited to speak before our Congress. So I'm just so hoping that all of that boosts your efforts and your efforts boost, you know, because this is all part of the larger picture about climate change.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is, you know, and it's something that we have to do. And we truly believe that, you know, Duke Energy could lead the way.
They could be
essentially champions and role models to other states and to other power plant companies to follow along the new trend.
Yeah.
They have the means and the resources to do it. Why aren't they doing it?
And they're now, what, the largest power company in the world?
Duke Energy is the largest utility company in the world.
In the world.
And they're here in North Carolina, and they're using their significant political advances to block efficiency and block, you know, progress.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to slow that down. We need them to stop, and we need them to not, you know, start investing in more nuclear plants and coal plants, you know, but we need them to say, we're going to start investing in renewable energy. You know, we're in 2015. You know, we can start doing that. It's obviously gained international attention, you know, that climate change is real. And if we don't do something now, we're going to really leave behind a bad legacy for ourselves and then also leave behind, you know, a mess for our future generation to endure.
Got, I think, 1 minute to go. I just want to thank. We have Ante Johnson here from NC Warren, who's a new organizer, but he is hit the ground and he's running and working with Lee County and Chatham County, helping organize the folks there who are about to be dumped on from Duke Power. And there's still time to slow that process and maybe stop that process. It ain't over till it's over. And we're so glad that you came on. We wish you luck. We want to have you on again sometime in the future and have other people from NC Warren, because, you know, the solarizing program in North Carolina is one of the things that our state can be proud of so far. We are, what, number 2 in the country? Because we can't be